All right, I want to welcome you back to another episode of the London Lyceum. I'm one of your hosts, Morgan Bird. And here at the London Lyceum, we like to prioritize serious thinking for a serious church. And that's why this year I'm going to be taking some time to do a series of interviews with people who are practitioners, people who take theology and doctrine and the Bible seriously, but who apply it in very practical ways, whether through pastoral ministry or in different ministry settings. And so I'm really excited today. I'm actually here on the campus of Coastal Carolina University in Conway, South Carolina, near Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, where I'm actually a graduate. And I'm here today interviewing Matt Reagan, who is the regional director of Campus Outreach Charleston. Matt, I appreciate you taking some time to meet with me here at Coastal Carolina and just talk a little bit about your life in ministry and theology as it relates to college ministry. So thanks for coming out today.
Glad to be here. Sean's up.
Hey, that's right. So first and foremost, just tell us a little bit about who you are, your family, life, where you live, and what you do every day.
Yeah, I am, as you said, the regional director of Campus Outreach Charleston. And a pastor at East Cooper Baptist Church in Charleston, South Carolina, where I grew up. My wife, Lisa, and I have been married for, it'll be 20 years in 3 weeks. We have a 17, 15, 12-year-old, and 9-year-old, two biological, two adopted. Yeah, my wife is born and bred Minnesotan. I spent 11 years in Minnesota with Campus Outreach, went to Furman University in the upstate of South Carolina, got involved with Campus Outreach there. We launched a team up to Bethlehem Baptist in Minnesota with John Piper. My wife was one of the first indigenous staff, if you will, and from Minnesota, they talk different. And we got married in February of 06, high temperature -7 on our wedding day, and did ministry shoulder to shoulder on the campuses of University of Minnesota and surrounding schools for about a decade until the Lord called us.
Awesome. So tell me more. You can go back maybe prior to your time in Minnesota, but how did you initially get plugged into college ministry? You know, maybe, I don't know if it was as a student or whatever, but tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was. I was a believer coming into college. I came to faith through my youth pastor at East Cooper Baptist. Went to Furman University in Greenville, South Carolina, founded 1826. When I got there, there were 6 upperclassmen who lived on my hall, and all of them were in the ministry of Campus Outreach and had basically foregone the opportunity to live in the North Village apartments, which were the swankier apartments, in order to live on a freshman hall again and invest into the freshmen, teach the gospel, love on us, show us the ropes of college. And one of them was a junior at the time. His name was Sims Key, my best friend to this day. And Sim started investing time in me, teaching me the scriptures, really teaching me in a refreshing, if not almost newfound way, the freedom of the grace of the gospel, the sweetness of the scriptures, and certainly the reality of eternity and kind of how to give your life away. So I lived on a freshman hall for 4 years in the same way, started ministering to the guys in my hall, saw the Lord work in and through me a lot, and I felt just grew in a sense of calling, not so much in chemistry, which was my major, and towards relational ministry, even on seeing the strategy of 18 to 22-year-olds and the formative nature of that season. And then my director, regional director at that time, Ken Curry, John Piper had spoken at a national conference and in Atlanta for all of CO, which we just had our third ever national conference a month ago. And he asked if we would come be, this will get into how Campus Outreach is related to the church, but he asked if Campus Outreach would come be the college ministry of Bethlehem Baptist Church. And that we knew that we had never been so far west or north in the States as Minneapolis. We just knew it as kind of a tundra, but there were 12 campuses within about 10 minutes of the church. And Bethlehem was always really strong with, I'm sure most of the listeners know John Piper, but strong in terms of head and heart. Piper is known for his mixture of precise theology and biblical understanding, but also zeal and kind of combining. I've always known John Piper to be somewhat authentically theatrical in the way he operates, but they were weak in hands. They strong head, strong heart, weak hands, small hands, so to speak. And so they asked if we would come up and to your word practitioner, like be more the practical hands, even training in the church to do ministry in the real world.
Yeah, awesome. So we've mentioned Campus Outreach a bunch already in just a couple minutes.
Yeah.
But if you could give me like the 1 to 2 minute explanation of what campus outreach is. And that might help us, because what we're going to plan to do now is after this is talk a little bit about college ministry and theology and how the two things relate. And I think that'll probably help flow into that. So what is campus outreach? And maybe in 1 to 2 minutes, what's unique about campus outreach?
Yeah. Campus outreach is a relational ministry of the ilk of a number of different ministries. Like you would find, I would say Navigators and probably Crew would be kind of our grandparents methodologically. But it was just there. The major distinctive, at least on the structural side, would be in the late 70s, Frank Barker at Briarwood Presbyterian in Birmingham and a guy named Curtis Tanner, who was doing ministry at Samford University. They basically said, we have a ripe harvest field here on the campus. We want to do life-on-life evangelism and discipleship, but we want to do this with the backing and the authority of the church so as not to, basically to not be a parachurch ministry. Though there are strengths to parachurch ministries, I think campus outreach was started with the understanding that A, we didn't want to go theologically rogue, which is possible. We didn't want to overly trust ourselves. And B, we didn't want to teach students that campus outreach, which is still pretty monolithic, is the multi-generational institution that is ordained for the advancement of the kingdom that is God's church. So we established ourselves as an apostolic arm of the church, submitting to local churches in every quote-unquote campus outreach franchise or iteration we've been a part of. And now there are about 38 around the world.
Okay, awesome. So you mentioned one of the things there that campus outreach didn't want to go theologically rogue.
Yeah.
And so for me, what that's going to say is, you know, part of the DNA of what you do every day is maybe slightly different from some of the other ministries, parachurch ministries that are out there. Not to say that there's anything wrong with them. I think we've all seen that there can be strengths and weaknesses of different ministries, and that's fine. They play their different part in the kingdom. Mm-hmm. But I can know just from my own personal experience that campus outreach is wanting to remain theologically tethered and theologically rich in how it thinks about life and ministry and even the long-term discipleship of the students that you're engaging. So I would love to hear a little bit more from you as a director. How are you seeking on a regular basis to train up your staff that serve under you? But then also students who you get a chance to rub shoulders with. How are you seeking to train them up theologically in doctrine?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. I mean, I'd start with the students, but even before I'd say that, you know, the campus outreach vision statement is glorifying God by building laborers on the campus for the lost world, based out of Matthew 9, you know, 35 through 38. Jesus sees the crowds, harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd, and says, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest field. And so, A, base our vision on scripture to begin with, but B, when we say glorifying God, there is an ultimate reality, triune God of the universe. And if we're going to glorify God in the hearts and lives of the students, and they're going to do that in their own lives, if God is reality, to put it plainly, theology is reality. And so why would we teach a false reality when they need to know what is real about the being who defines the universe? That said, with students, I think it really does start with an intensity surrounding a high view of the scriptures is big. And with that, obviously a high view of God, and of the sovereignty of God, the holiness of God. We teach, there are all sorts of methods to teach the scriptures. We use OIA, observation, interpretation, application, which is really, Jonathan and I, one of the staff here, were just walking across campus here at Coastal Carolina with a new young believing student. And he asked that student, how's your OIA been going? How's your study been going? He said, it's amazing. I used to read my Bible to kind of get it done. And now I'm chewing on the scriptures. And so right now they're going through 1 Peter this semester, 2 verses a day, chewing on the text, like all the way in, learning how to use surrounding context, learning how to define terms, learning how to use the same author, like learning how zooming out in Peter and all those things. So it feels really like there's a richness of the engagement of scripture to begin with, which is probably the theological foundation that's built. Mm-hmm. And then with our staff, we do pretty intensive training throughout the year. We have really 3 weeks of head training, a week of heart training, a week of hands training, all based in the scriptures. We usually spend our summers doing, we have a 5-year development plan that rotates. theological training is going to be, we're going to do, you know, The Doctrine of the Christian Life by John Frame and read an hour and a half together and then discuss an hour and a half together every day during the summer project or 4 days a week or so after about 45 minutes of digging in together in the scriptures. And then we'll do the works of C.S. Lewis. We'll do, I think this summer we're going to do Knowing God by Packer, which is pretty theologically rich in itself. But yeah, we just kind of keep that during the semesters. They have a weekly book that they're reading. And then always our staff are also digging into the scriptures with us in kind of depth.
Are you finding that right now, you know, as you're engaging with students and talking with staff, are there like particular doctrines or particular aspects of theology that seem like they're coming up more often or needing sort of in a, if you will, like a theological tool belt that a staff member might need as they're engaging with either law students or with maybe new, young believers on the campus? Are there a few theological topics that seem to be rising to the top in conversation these days?
I would say these days and timelessly, and I didn't mention this earlier, but one of the distinctives of Campus Outreach is we are Reformed in our theology, and therefore all of our partnering churches, and we've had different denominational partnering churches, but all have been Reformed in their own theology, mm-hmm. which has saved us a world of heartache because, though, again, let's give our disclaimers on loving parachurch ministries. One of the great challenges of parachurch ministries, and we've had staff come to Campus Outreach from other ones, is you have one person who's Reformed in their doctrine, another who's not. And while we wouldn't say that it's ultimately primary and salvific, we would still say it's A, salvation adjacent, and B, methodologically crucial, because we're an evangelistic ministry. Mm-hmm. And so if a student doesn't believe that God is ultimately sovereign, it changes the whole way they share the gospel. So, and yeah, I mean, we're teaching, when we did TULIP in the last year, as just walking through the 5 points with an eye toward the campus, mm-hmm. but walking through kind of the depths of the 5 points. If I'm doing a what we call a theology time with our students, any kind of Q&A, its top three questions is going to be, does God choose people? What happens to people who have never heard? Like all of God's sovereignty and salvation, mm-hmm. Or the original sin and the depth of sin. Those are coming to the forefront. So yeah, TULIP is front and center all the time. And it has been since I was a student.
Yeah. So I love how you already kind of moving this direction where you're saying that the type of theology that you sort of subscribe to or how you steep yourself in a particular expression of the Bible or doctrine is going to impact your ministry. It's going to impact your ministry philosophy.
That's right.
And I know you, Matt. I know you're the kind of person that thinks well and thinks deeply about your ministry and how you're wanting your staffers and your students to engage, not just what they're doing, but why they're doing it and how they're doing it. So how do you see this kind of unique vision of theology, and particularly a kind of a Reformed-ish theology shaping college ministry? I mean, why would that actually make a difference if somebody was coming from a Reformed perspective or not coming from a Reformed perspective? How would that actually affect something like college ministry?
Yeah. On basically every front, but I can tell some things. On the one hand, I'm now old enough to be, my oldest kid's 17, right? So yesterday, I sat with a student who I was interviewing for baptism, just came to faith. Young lady goes to Charleston Southern University, go Bucks. And she said, she was asking me questions about her family. She's got an alcoholic father, honestly, an ugly history. So I can coach her to say, both, if you work hard enough, you can persuade your dad out of, you know, with the gospel, out of alcoholism, or this isn't the way it's supposed to be, full stop. You know, there is some truth in the sense of the fallen world that's not the way it's supposed to be, but if God is not intending things for good, that we intend for evil, then I don't have comfort to give her, right? Nor do I have the hope of her family's salvation to give her, because the way that the Lord, who said, let light shine out of darkness, shone in her heart to get the light of the knowledge of the glory of Jesus Christ. If he can't do that to dad, she's been through the helpless reps of trying to save dad, you know? And so I just think that's one moment where you say, I am teaching you that the merciful, eternal, sovereign, powerful God who saved you can save your family. And the merciful, powerful, sovereign, eternal God who has seen you suffer under the brokenness of these generations is eternally working these things together for your good.
Not only that
he's promised your glorification, but he is now working this to make you be conformed to the image of his son. That's a different statement. You know what I'm saying?
The actual answers that you're going to give to a student, and I don't know if you're familiar with Sinclair Ferguson's The Whole Christ, but you know, he talks about this tincture of your ministry, like even just the aura or the aroma of your ministry is going to be shaped differently when you're steeped in grace, when you're steeped in God's sovereignty over both suffering and salvation.
And sin.
What about actual practices, you know, like you mentioned earlier, like, you know, how you share the gospel, or maybe like the emphasis you put on prayer, or even decisions you might make around what kind of meetings you hold or how you conduct those meetings and that sort of thing. Like how are some of those practical decisions that y'all are having to make on these campuses being informed by your theological grounding?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm trying to think through some of those practical ramifications. I think on the one hand, you know, I think certainly in our training on evangelism, it's abundantly clear because we start with total depravity in the people we're talking to. Mm-hmm. Like we're starting with something like 2 Corinthians chapter 2, fragrance from life to life for some, death to death for others. Who's sufficient for these things? Mm-hmm. And we're starting there. We're starting with you can't by in your own power persuade. You carry around this treasure and jars of clay. Surpassing power belongs to God, not to you. Mm-hmm. And it simultaneously is killing fear and increasing courage while giving hope, you know, for the people that we're talking to. So I would say it's all over our evangelism training. I'm trying to think for how it would apply necessarily. Maybe I would just say we're probably a more vertical ministry in how we think about even a weekly meeting. Mm-hmm. That we're not, here we go. We still believe, you know, I've emceed conferences and retreats and the whole thing. We still do the fun thing. I was just training a couple of our MCs for a winter retreat the other day saying, let's talk about what this is for. But in the training of MCs, we say, the whole point of this is to disarm people, to ready them to hear the gospel, and you're not exalting yourself and it's not going to save anybody. Like, I think there's just when you talk about God's sovereignty to save, that matters a lot. And the holiness of Christ, it means that I don't think, maybe I'd say entertainment isn't first when we're thinking, can we be contextual enough to the world to make a student come to faith? Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't mean it's nothing. We still, there's elements of real world contextualization for students and we're going to play games in our meetings and the whole thing. But I do think it takes pressure off and for those who are engaging, students engaging, but it also changes the tenor, the tincture, if you will, mm-hmm. of the meeting somewhat to say, there's a seriousness, maybe a gravity to say we're here to exalt the holy God and learn about him. And so there's also probably what ends up happening is a funnel down to the centrality of the scriptures and the expositing of the gospel.
Have you heard about the official sponsor of the London Lyceum and Hanover Press? It's Professor Lending, your premier home financing guide, helping you not only purchase a home, but steward it well for you, your family, and your future. Founded by me, Jordan Stefaniak, and staffed by local church leaders, we exist to bring clarity and trust back into the lending process. Home financing can feel confusing, oftentimes sketchy, and that's why we're here, to offer integrity, transparency, education, and excellent service. Too often, there is zero education in the mortgage process, and you're left completely hanging, and that's not right. That's why you should check us out at professorlending.com. That is professorlending.com. Whether you're a first-time buyer, working with a unique property like a farm, or a builder needing liquidity, or even an investor looking to expand your portfolio, we have solutions tailored for you. So check us out, Professor Lending, financing with integrity for families who care about their future.
Awesome. So you're somebody who's training others, you're pouring yourself out a lot. Are there any things you've done over the years to kind of keep yourself not just fresh devotionally, but particularly theologically? I've gone on and seen that you've written some for Desiring God. Over the last 15 years, you've got a smattering of articles and things like that. But how have you kept yourself fresh, particularly theologically, when you're so busy with ministry?
It's hard for me to honestly, when you ask the question, I think because of the way that I was trained, I don't normally dichotomize theology and ministry.
Yeah,
I'm thinking about it. Just
yeah,
one and the same, you know, some applied wisdom, you know, whatever. But I'm a mental maniac, and so I need good theology to calm me down, but I also gravitate that way. So you probably, in a way, you're asking the wrong person, because there are a lot of other guys that are like better at the brass tacks, practical stuff than I am. I tend to live 30,000 feet or with the person in front of me. I don't do real well with the practical piece because I tend to ask why first. That said, A, I like to read. B, I'm tethered to the church. I'm a pastor of our church. Yeah. And so week in and week out, day in and day out, we're challenging each other with quotes, excerpts, current events. We're reading through some Calvin on the Christian life and on our pastor's team right now. And we have, maybe this would help, but we cultivated on our team what we would call, I would call a theological vision, but we have 30 flavors on our team, and the columns of identity, community, and mission, I introduced them to our team when we moved to Charleston. And it's basically 10 kind of vertical, who is God and what is your identity in him? We call them flavors, values. 10 in the realm of community, all theologically steeped, and then 10 in the realm of vision, which are probably more practically aimed toward the campus, but again, scripturally based. And we rotate through those as a team constantly. We try to get through all 30 every year to memorize them, especially in what we say, our last flavor in identity is keep your hat on, which means do not take off your identity in Christ theological hat to put on your ministry hard hat and lose all that God is for you in Jesus Christ. And that has been really rich for me as a leader of the team to live in that keep your hat on flavor. And I honestly, man, I've told my wife this recently, like on the one hand, a lot of people, you get a meal on a Sunday morning, but the beauty of the ministry, the privilege I think that I get to be part of is I'm eating, I don't know which diet fad this is, but I'm eating small meals throughout the week. Like I'm eating small meals all the time, every day, all the time. And meeting with students is not, you know, just counseling them through their Aunt Betty's bunion. It's like, it's walking through the depths of their life with the Bible open in front of us. And so I just could do that all the time. I just have to learn how to exalt in Jesus while I'm counseling somebody else through the scriptures.
That's awesome. Yeah. You know, I think that the concept of theological vision is so important. It's sort of what like spans the gap, right? Between just pure kind of doctrine on one side and then practice on the other. You're saying, how can we actually kind of think well about how our doctrine and theology then begins to inform how we do things and why we do things. And I think so often that is the piece that's missing in our ministries and churches is we don't always connect the dots on how the things relate. And so I love that you're doing that. So I want to transition now to talk a little bit about the church. You know, again, you mentioned it at the beginning, but just how one of the things that makes Campus Outreach unique is that you guys submit yourself to a local church. So I can even explain how this works where I'm at. So you're the regional director of the Charleston region, but you live, I don't know, almost an hour and 45 minutes or so from one of the college campuses, which is Coastal Carolina. So you live a good ways away. And it would make no sense for the people, the staffers who are on the ministry here and the students who are on the ministry here to try to be connected to the church there in Charleston. I mean, it's over an hour away. It's kind of silly. So when y'all sent campus ministers to come to Coastal, you wanted to have a local church partnership so that these staffers would more or less come up under the authority of the local church here in the Myrtle Beach area. And then also it gives a great opportunity for those staffers to bring the students that they're reaching, whether it's new believers or even non-believers, to come to church with them at a particular local church. And so that's kind of how this works out right here in this area. And I know that that's a value that Campus Outreach has everywhere that it exists. So what are some benefits or what are some values that you've seen over the years of Campus Outreach being connected to the local church and even under the authority of the local church?
Yeah. There are probably manifold. We have loved our partnership with you guys. You know, the way our region works is, and I think every Campus Outreach region, at least stateside, is there is a single hub church. All of our staff are employees of that church, submissive to the authority and shepherding of the elders and pastors of East Cooper Baptist Church. But in the partnership case, when we have distance, we've established a partnership with you guys for y'all to be the shepherding care and somewhat authoritative care over our staff at Coastal Carolina University, which has been hugely helpful for so many reasons. One of them is, I don't know how many conversations I have with my staff or my students when they say, Morgan was talking. And I think that's so good because I have a team of 16 and we basically have this mini, it's not a church, but it feels like a church sometimes, 100, 150 students all the time. And there's a lot of relationships. And so when I know that they are shepherded well by Christ-exalting, biblically grounded leaders who care for their souls, I'm like, that helps me sleep at night. That's one reason, mm-hmm. right? Two, they get to see the multi-generational body who loves each other in action. So when those young believing students or those non-believing students come to church and they say, oh, people really love each other. I don't know how many testimonies I have heard of them saying it. The first thing they say is not, and this is, it almost sounds backwards. The first thing they say, and maybe this is just John in action, they know your disciples, my disciples, by your love for one another. Mm-hmm. But they don't say, I heard about Jesus and it blew me away. They say, I watch people love each other. Mm. And when they see that, especially across cultures or across generations, and they go, how is this happening? There's a real powerful value to that that they can't quite get the same way just from 18 to 22. So that's beautiful. I think they get to see an example on just the liturgies of the church on a Sunday. A lot of them grew up in highly liturgical but not gospel preaching traditions. And they'll just turn to me and go, this is so new for me. Like, I'm actually relating to the things that they're talking about, you know? And it's not young people necessarily. I mean, you're a young person, but by and large, it's like, it changes their paradigm for what this thing is. And the reason that's so valuable is because in a blink, they're gone. And even though they don't maybe have the exact same experience when they graduate, it's fairly seamless mm-hmm. to say, we're not your church, we're not your church, we're not your church mm-hmm. from the very beginning mm-hmm. and incrementally help them tie in. So all that is, I'm just eternally grateful for it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So like what you were saying at the end there, I mean, I know when I was in college, looking back on it, I think you look back and you see how easy it can be for a student in college to misunderstand what's happening in a campus ministry and just kind of assume that that is church or assume that that's all they need to do mm-hmm. to have a healthy walk with God. And, you know, for a season that can fill a gap, but like at some point everybody graduates, sure. you know, and if you haven't gotten a real taste of what local church life looks like, then it can be a rude awakening when you turn, you know, 22 or 23 or whatever it is. And now you're, you know, quote unquote adult, although obviously, hopefully, you know, you've been developing as a young adult before that. But to be able to integrate yourself into a local church while you're in college can benefit so much. And I think I can just speak on the church side of it. I mean, it's a wonderful value to us as well. I mean, you know, just when a church has an arm of people who are going out on a campus and giving you kind of an outlet to love on and care for, and then also just the energy and the excitement that college students bring. It's an amazing partnership, and it makes me thankful that Campus Outreach wants to prioritize the church and sees the value of, hey, like Jesus promised to build his church, and Campus Outreach is not that, but we want to be a part of what Jesus is doing in his church. And to me, that's... Yeah. Okay, so yeah, so wait, say that. So the apostolic arm, where does that phrase come from?
Yeah, let me back up and fact check you because you said everybody has to graduate. Actually, Coastal Carolina, only about 40% of people graduate. You made it. Ouch. Good job.
And in 4 years, I did.
Oh yeah, yeah, and that number's really low.
And I stayed here all 4 years, which is also probably.
We just looked at the numbers. It's like 26-37% of students at Coastal Carolina graduate within 4 years.
Wow.
So you did it.
Praise God. Hey. The sovereignty of God.
Now, I was just thinking about the piece of, I didn't say this a minute ago. I want to get to apostolic arm. I didn't say this a minute ago, but one of the sweetnesses of students engaging in the church is we've either, whether it's like a quote unquote adopt a student program, or just, we just have families who notice the college students and they say, I want you to come over for lunch. Or I'll do your laundry or something. And it's not just that service. They now see a godly family in action. Some of our staff are old folks like me, but most of them are 24, mm-hmm. 26, mm-hmm. and they're still close to the stage of the students in. And when they see families loving each other, we are not just trying to build college students who love other college students. We're trying to build, we're asking God to build husbands and wives and fathers and mothers who are faithful for 40 years. And now they get a picture. They get a little zoom, a little fast forward. And that's one of the sweetest parts of the whole thing. On the church, on the other side, to your point, in the next 2 months, we're going to baptize probably 8 students at church that are mostly brand new believers. Mm-hmm. And that moment, I think when they see, oh, like I too can participate in what God is doing in the hearts of students, of people to change lives. God is working, like he's moving forward. Like when they see the church grow by conversion, mm-hmm. to put it that way, which is not the normal way of a Southern Baptist church right now. Yeah. That is incredibly powerful and inspirational. So we love being in that sense, if I can not sound arrogant when I say this, kind of a tugboat for the church. In that way, that's really sweet. Apostolic Arm. That awesome. That actually leads in. Apostolic Arm would be, we tell our church, they like, what do y'all do? What's going on? All our staff raise their funding to do this full-time vocational job. But I just say we are local missionaries on the campus. Our staff are spending 90% of their time on the campus, reaching students in this kind of strange, temporary, self-contained ecosystem of the campus. So we are going to be an apostolic arm of the church on the fringes, because it's not quite the same, where it's not exactly age and stage where you go, you have your kids ministry, you have your middle school ministry, you have your high school ministry, and then you have your college ministry. It's this college ministry is this gap where they move to this new habitat. And so the apostolic arm means we're moving to that habitat with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I would think, you know, I think most average church members probably would feel somewhat overwhelmed at the prospect of just showing up on a college campus and trying to meet students and get involved in their lives. And so the idea of actually having campus missionaries who, again, are tethered to a local church and who are under the authority of a local church, but then are spending, you know, the better part of their time in the week actually going onto a campus where they feel at home and welcomed and investing in evangelism and discipleship seems like a great partnership. All right, so I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. I didn't ask you about this before. I don't even know what you're going to say to this. So we'll see. With relationship to campus outreach and the local church, would campus outreach baptize a student? Like, would you guys go out on a random Wednesday and hold a baptism and baptize a student? Would you guys do that?
No.
Okay. So your answer is no. Would you guys, at one of your Tuesday night meetings or something, would you partake of the Lord's Supper? Okay.
Let me just back up and say, we did have a kid on our project about 20 years ago who was serving communion in his room. He's like a sophomore to his guys in his group, and we put a couple.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
So why not? So why would campus outreach not want to baptize or take the Lord's Supper as a part of your college campus ministry? I mean, you've got students. Some of them are believers. They read their Bible. They're disciples of the Lord. So why would you want to say, hey, we're not going to take that step and do those things?
Yeah, we subscribe to the historical polity of the church and the ordained institution of the church, and believe we are saying we're not the church. We're an apostolic arm of the church, and we actually are shepherded by elders who administer sacramentally the ordinances, and we baptize within this multi-generational shepherded body called the church under God's watchful eye. We preach the scriptures there. We serve the Lord's Supper there. And, you know, churches differ on open communion and membership and the whole thing, but by and large, that's where we're going. So we just, we actually had a student a couple of years ago who kind of, I would say, went rogue and started his own little quote unquote church with like 7 college students. And it just felt very, very tenuous to me, mm-hmm. because there are, and even in our fairly autonomous Baptist tradition, there's still a normal pattern historically of healthy shepherding and polity that we, like I said earlier, we don't want to go rogue. Mm-hmm. And so we're not going to trust to ourselves the ordinances that are entrusted to Christ Church.
So if there's somebody listening, there's a good chance somebody on here is listening and they're maybe from a different ministry, whether it's Crew or Young Life or Fellowship Christian Athletes or something like that. And they've maybe seen that kind of going on in their ministries and they don't know how to think about it. I mean, if you were to kind of give your like, if you bumped into one of those people at a conference or something like that, and they were asking you, hey, this is what we do. You know, what would be your kind of 1 or 2 minute spiel on, hey, here's why at campus outreach, we don't think that's healthy. What would you say to them?
First, I would say, I don't think it's evil. I don't think there's malicious intent. I've been at an FCA baptism before and felt unsettled, but also rejoiced. You know, so I'm like, I just want to be clear. First of all, I mean, to get real clear, I think when Jesus says what he says to Peter in Matthew 16 and then in chapter 18, basically what you bind on earth is found in heaven, what you loose on earth is loose in heaven, and then talks about how we do church discipline in chapter 18, he seems to be establishing some pattern of pastoral authority, whereby he's saying the church is ultimately visibly, not necessarily invisibly, not there's only one lawgiver and judge, the one who's able to save and to destroy, so who are you to judge your neighbor? However, it does seem like the church is handed the keys of saying, as far as we deem it, under the authority of those appointed as elders over the church, we deem it to be that these people are inside of God's church and born again. And so there's a real tenuousness to step outside of that channel of authority to say, I think you're a believer. And so what I've seen, and real practically, is in the excitement of trying to baptize somebody, and I'll get to another piece of this in a second, trying to baptize somebody, we say, let's baptize them in the, because the energy of college students is really high and we can feel warm and fuzzy. We're baptizing a non-believer. Mm-hmm. And it happens a lot, mm-hmm. like a lot. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean we know all the time. It's possible I've baptized a non-believer. So I don't know, but sure. At least I have the comfort of saying we have together deemed this person to be, as far as we can tell, reborn, and we're baptizing them into the body of Christ. And by the body of Christ, we don't mean we're baptizing them either just as a random individual, mm-hmm. or we're baptizing them into FCA. Baptism into the body of Christ, right? Like the full bride of Christ. And it, I think it's beneficial to be part of a visible manifestation of his bride in line with the historical church. Is that work?
Yeah, man. I appreciate your charity. And I mean, that's one of our values here at the London Lyceum, to have charity. And I know, you know, to be able to understand there are a lot of good motivations. But what I'm kind of just, again, getting from this whole conversation is how thankful I am for campus outreach, how thankful I am for you and your willingness like you said at the beginning, just think biblically, like to get into the Bible, to soak into the Bible, and then to actually allow the scriptures and then the synthesis of the scriptures that we call theology to inform what we're doing and to think, even to think long-term, right? To think beyond just what's good today and what's going to be fun and exciting for our ministry today, but to really think in terms of a big God who's in control of history, who's going to be walking with a student, not just when they're 18 or 20 or 22, but like when they're 50 and when they're 65, and how can we set them up to enjoy a life with God and his people for their whole life. Yeah, man, I've really enjoyed just kind of getting to hear a little bit more from you. And hopefully this will be an encouragement to people who maybe some people need to be still convinced that college ministry is a good thing. I mean, certainly I know so many people who have benefited from college ministry. But some people out there who maybe view it as a competition with the church. But I just want to, you know, say from my perspective, there can be a real wonderful partnership. And I know I'm the a participant in that and just thankful for what you guys do on the campus. So thanks. Awesome. Awesome, man. Well, thanks for your time. This has been another episode of the London Lyceum. We look forward to getting to you another time soon. Peace.